All right. Good afternoon. This is a meeting of the Colorado Voter Access and Modernized Elections Commission. The date is December 19th, 2014. It is 12:05 p.m., and we are meeting in the Aspen Room at the Secretary of State's office, 1700 Broadway, Denver, Colorado. This meeting is also being broadcast over the Internet. We only have a couple agenda items today. One is a post-election discussion, which we'll get into in a moment, and then we'll be setting a date and time for the next meeting. But the first item on the agenda is an invitation for public comment. Well, let's take roll. Never mind.
Hello, this is Sheila.
If the commissioners just want to run down the line and go ahead and
introduce yourselves.
Hillary Hall, Boulder County Clerk and Recorder.
Jennifer Levin, the Legal Center for People with Disabilities and Older People.
Jason Syme with America Votes.
Elena Nunez, Colorado Common Cause.
Max Tyler, State Representative.
Michael Brown, OIT.
And Suzanne Steyer, Deputy Secretary of State for Secretary of State Scott Gessler. So the first item on the agenda is an invitation for public comment, and we have a sign-up sheet. We'll be limiting public comment to 3 minutes. And the first person is Charles Ehler or Ehler? Ehler, do you want to come on up? If you could come up to the podium and then just introduce yourself. If you're speaking on behalf of a group, let us know that. If it's you're speaking on your own behalf, just introduce yourself.
Well, my name is Charles Ehler. I'm the vice president of a couple of Republican clubs down in El Paso County. Don't necessarily represent them. I'm not as familiar with the subject matter as I would like to be, so my comments might be a little off. My main concern is that the elections, particularly what has been in the news in several counties, indicates that maybe our election laws are deficient and allowing election fraud and election mismanagement to occur, which would, in the long run, disenfranchise the voters. And that would eventually lead to the perception that our own government is illegitimate. I think we need to look at what we have to do to prevent that from happening in the future.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
David Nelson?
I'm David Nelson. I'm from El Paso County, Colorado Springs. And I'm here because I feel that the modernization of the voting has disenfranchised voters. And by voter fraud that can be occurred, I don't know what the percentage should be of voters that we get in with this modernization of the mail-in ballots but any vote, including mine especially, that I don't feel like we have voter competence. I don't necessarily represent a group, except for I'm old, and I'm elderly, and I am disabled, that I feel that we should look more hard at opening up the polls. We're kind of modern down here in El Paso County. I think the length of time that we're using in weeks and maybe held it to days to vote, instead of like 2.5 weeks, I think that's had a real influence of how we can change the election. But I don't know if that's necessarily good. As citizens, we do have an obligation to vote, I feel. And there are duties that we have to hold our citizenry. And I also feel that with immigration the way it is, the illegals that are on the street, we give them more of an opportunity to get in and vote, which means we have non-citizen voting. And in some areas, it can be 3%. I know in California, non-citizen voting is up to 14.4. So I don't think that modernization, the way we're doing it, and the time length that we're giving is a good deal. So, and the regulation of trying to maintain and open the polls for that amount of time, and the collection of all the mail-in ballots and the rules, It's got to be very costly. And I know that it seems like we got a lot of money because we borrowed a lot of money, but just streamline this a little bit. So I think I covered just about everything. Thank you for hearing me. And I hope that we can straighten these issues out before 2016. And I hope we can straighten this last election out so we can get these guys sworn in on the 7th. Thank you.
Thank you. The next person is Harvey Branscombe.
Thanks, Harvey Branscombe from Eagle County.
And just for the record, we did receive your comments, and they were distributed to the commission. So they're
thank you very much. Yes,
posted online at some point.
They are.
They are.
Okay. Oh, great. So I just want to point to a few things in my written presentation. One of them is I've extracted a little bit of the enabling legislation, which points out that the next report, I guess the final report that the commission is going to produce, is one to evaluate the use of technology during the 2014 general election. I wanted to help you to recognize what might constitute technology used in the election, first of all, since I don't know, I haven't heard this discussion happen yet. But since I've just finished presenting credentials in 13 or 14 different counties in the election, I have a little bit of firsthand knowledge. I have seen cell phones used in VSPCs to present a replica of an election applicable identification. That's a use of technology. I've seen technology in the use in duplication. I have heard of DREs being used for duplication. I have seen everyone counts on remote websites being used for duplication. And of course, signature verification is heavily mechanized in about 6 or 7 counties with the use of ballot sorting and image capture devices. The poll book has turned from paper into electronic. It's now entirely technology. Tabulation, obviously, is by technology, and printing, both ballot on demand and the printing done in advance by fulfillment vendors is technology. So we've centralized and mechanized the election, and I think the effect, which hasn't been brought forward here at this commission, is the effect on the citizen oversight and citizen involvement in the election. And I have observed that it's been getting more and more difficult for citizens to naturally recognize how their election operates once the precinct polling place was ended. So I'd like to just point to a couple of big, bold statements in my commentary. One is that the transition the transition of 1303 with respect to election verification was very dramatic, and it needs to be looked at. It seriously needs to be looked at. The laws and rules that we have in place are primarily intended for polling place elections, which are very decentralized and distributed and citizen-operated. And I've also concerned that we have too much attention paid to propping up voter confidence as opposed to proving election quality, which would create voter confidence naturally if there was a good flow of information. So I'd like to make sure that we make a quality election with the right evidence flowing to prove that it is. And I have included in my commentary a whole series of questions which I think you ought to be able to answer. And those are questions that will dig at things that I've seen during the election process that need more attention. But I don't have time to go into them now. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Carol Tone?
Well, I'm sorry. I didn't realize that.
Oh, okay.
Sign up.
Oh, that's fine. Jen Rafe?
Thank you. My name is Jen Rafe. I'm the vice chair of Adams County GOP. I'm also elected to the Mapleton School Board and serve in various other capacities with groups around the state. But I'm here today speaking on behalf of myself. And I really didn't know what I was going to tell you until I walked in the room. And what I'm going to do is read my latest email to the Secretary of State that has gone unresponded to. In fact, I've sent 3 emails concerning the scanning of compromised ballots in Adams County. So I will just read this so it's on the public record. This is a formal request to the Colorado Secretary of State to issue an emergency declaratory order to Adams County Clerk and Recorder Karen Long to immediately stop all electronic scanning of ballots, even in the initial stages of scanning. If identifiable markings are being recorded in any part of the scanning process, it needs to stop. All electronic copies of any and all ballots with identifiable markings must be immediately secured and placed in the Secretary of State's control and custody. There are widespread concerns about these markings in an already bad situation, and scanning these ballots is making it worse. I'm worried this is causing me and others personal harm. As a publicly elected official and vice chair of county party, there are people whom I associate with that would very much like to know how I vote, and it worries me greatly that there is now an opportunity for them to gain this knowledge. I and others did not waive our right to a secret ballot. And that includes government. Government, whether you are paid staff, election judges, or elected staff in a county election office, you have no right to see how anybody votes, period. I don't care what oath you take. And I'd like the Secretary of State to enforce that constitutional right. So finally, you know, my previous two emails, like I said, on this urgent matter have not even been acknowledged, received, or responded to. I would like them replied to today with the disposition of my request. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Is there anybody else present who wishes to address public comment? No? All right. Then the next item on the agenda is the post-election discussion. And I think we'll start with the business practices group update.
Great. We have Sheila Reiners on the phone to present one county perspective, and then Amber is on her way, I believe, as well to talk a little bit about that. While we wait for them, I sent out some documents this morning, the preliminary round of the survey, as well as some data that the Secretary of State's office has gathered that's similar to our other election reviews. I would like the commissioners to review and let me know, and I'll send this in an email as well, by that Monday in January, if there's additional information that you would like further to explore for our next meeting, which currently is tentatively set for the 9th, but I'm not sure if that will hold up once we finalize our schedule. But anyway, our early January meeting that I'm assuming we'll still have before we issue the final report. I also sent a draft of the 2013 format for the business practice group report. We're planning on following a similar pattern, talking about the state as a whole, what issues came up, what recommendations would come from that. And then I'm assuming the technology, Trevor's team, will have their own piece in there as well. We'll have a bit about some of the impacts from the technology side of things, as well as what worked, what didn't, and where to go next. So I'm at this point, if there's specific things that you want to discuss that you've seen from what's been sent out, I don't know how much time people have had, but just wanted to let you know where we're headed with the business practice group portion of it. In addition, we'll have a business practice group meeting already scheduled for January 7th to really wrap up any of your questions or comments and that sort of thing. And then last item, we're planning at our next meeting to bring in more counties if you wanted to hear more about their experience, that sort of thing. We'd hope to have some here today, but the closeness to the holidays has impacted abilities for those to attend. So with that, I ask the group, where do you want to go next?
Anyone? Go ahead, Representative Tyler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was wondering, what I noticed in cruising through those, it looked like we had about 5% of the people at the polls on Election Day. Pretty regular throughout the state, although it seemed like Boulder was a little higher, just anecdotally.
Felt like Boulder was a little higher.
Yeah. Boulder's
just leave any comment alone after that.
But regardless of that, is that about what was expected, plus or minus? Did that contribute to a load factor, either greater or lesser than was anticipated? How did that election day work go based on the people who were there?
Yeah, so I think that's a good question. I know for ourselves, we weren't really sure what to expect. We had prepared to do up to 10,000 when we were really hoping we wouldn't reach that number just because of what that would mean. And usually they don't all come in even paces. And so that's a great question. I'll take that back and see, is that what counties were expecting? We haven't asked it at the state level.
Thank you.
Can we make a note of that? Or actually... A note has been made of that. Thanks.
Any other questions?
This is Elena. I thought, and I wasn't at the business practices meeting, but saw the notes and it seemed from one of my staff, and it seemed like there were some kind of top-level themes about dropping ballots off versus mailing them back. As Representative Tyler already mentioned, the use of in-person voting versus mail. Mm-hmm. Is it possible for those maybe who haven't gone through all the documents to kind of give kind of that top over, that 10,000-foot overview before we hear from the couple of counties both this time and next time? Or is that too difficult? It just seems like it might be a good place to start for those who haven't fully done it.
Yeah, any. I think some of it wanted to do a bit more research myself to make sure that what we speak to is true, and I haven't had the opportunity to dig into the numbers to the degree that we'd like to. I think, you know, what it's similar to what we saw in the primary and the general, again, except with a higher in-person turnout, still very proportionally low to the number of people who participated in the election. I think some of the other themes that remain true, the number of new registrations, while larger on election day than in the previous elections, proportionally are pretty similar to 13 and even less than in the primary. What we really see on election day are people who have moved within a county first, updating their address. And I don't know if we knew that was what we were going to see. We've seen it now for a couple of elections. Then the second highest category of people who made changes on election day were people who were already registered but living somewhere else in the state. So, again, updating their registration. Both of those were already allowed under previous law, so that's not really a change. And then the third category of who registration changes were actually the new registrants. Again, seeing those in more mobile communities, the numbers were greater than other counties where a more stable population is in place. So I think that's one of the big themes. And I know Sheila's on the phone as well. I think, Sheila, if you have some that you want to mention to the group that you noticed from what you've looked through, to put you totally 100% on the spot. Okay. If she's there.
Sheila, are you still on the line?
I was there.
Yes, I am. I'm sorry. I was having another conversation. What was the question?
Sorry, we were just talking about the themes that we've seen at a first glance round from the data. I talked a little bit about the registration and how that theme continues to hold true, where the largest number of people who make a registration change on election day is in county, next followed by out county, then new registrants. I think I was just giving you the opportunity to speak to any of the other trends.
Oh, thank you. I do think we had over 50% so far of what we've seen of people who returned a mail ballot used a drop box. That was one thing. And it was less in the rural areas than it is in the metro area. So that was interesting. And I think what we also learned in an overarching theme of the conversation that we had in the BPG meeting was that even though we experienced technical difficulties, our backup plans and our contingency plans that we had in place worked well, and we were able to get through Election Day without much of a hiccup at all. So that was a couple of things that we discussed as well.
Forgotten, now it's all coming back to me. The other one that we really saw was the reduction in provisionals. Less than 1,000 for the whole state, and that is quite dramatically different. Again, we'll have the comparisons to 10 in the final version of the report. And of those, about, 60% ended up being accepted. And most of those were, the majority of those, like 41% of that 60% were, or 40% of those accepted were due to connection issues that happened. The raw number on that was 500. Wait, that's the whole total number. Shouldn't do numbers off the top of my head. It was 270-ish of those who had that issue. Let me look at that one up. But anyway, it was less than 500 of those who had a connection issue. So even though we had issues with connection all the time, it's still a very small number of those that ended up voting provisionally because of it. Of those rejected, the largest was not actually being a resident of the state, county, or jurisdiction, which is why they shouldn't have been registered nor their ballot counted. So I think while those numbers are small, there's probably a bit more to dig in and just understand what does that represent as far as the voters' experience, but overall, extremely low numbers on the provisional ballots. Other things that we expected to see that were true, the 2 weeks of voting, not a lot of happening in the first 2 weeks up until those days before. Saturdays are extremely slow. I sent those in your versions of the data and highlighted the Saturdays so you can see how many people came to a service center in person. I think the number where we can't, and I know Deputy Secretary had asked about, and I'm not sure how we represent it yet, is the number of replacements that are being issued. That's not reflected in those numbers. So because a replacement ballot is issued on a day, but it's not actually cast until a different day. And so that's the one piece in the data that we're still looking, is there a way to pull that out, replacement numbers out. So.
Could I add to that, Hillary?
You bet, Sheila.
The other thing that we had discussed was that the number of rejected provisionals were similar to previous years. So it seems like the number of provisionals that were uncountable were kind of the same, very similar to other years that we've conducted a general election in. So it means that we're staying steady, I guess, with the reasons for rejection. The other thing, too, is we discussed the amount of undeliverable ballots significantly dropped mm-hmm. from the counties we've heard from so far. They went from around 10% to 4%, which indicates that the national change of address piece is really starting to show its worth for us.
So I said those are probably the big themes.
Mm-hmm. So to go back to the provisionals question, and I don't know if there's a way to know, is the reduction in provisionals, do you know if that's mail ballot replacements that would have previously, if someone showed up in person and wanted to vote in person, that would have been a provisional if it was on election day, or address changes which were allowed under the current law but were a little bit clunkier and so could have, like, do you have a, where do we think that reduction came from, and do we?
I think it's definitely a combination. I think one of the things that we really noticed and have spoken of before is we have always had a very high acceptance rate of provisionals in our state, which means we were taking extra time and effort to process them on the back end. By having a model where everyone is connected live to SCORE, it really allows you to serve and figure out what the voter needs in that moment and get them a live actual ballot that they're entitled to vote. So it's a combination. So for counties that were polling places, I know Boulder County in particular in 2010 and 12, it was majority of our ballots that were accepted. One of the major reasons was they were issued a mail ballot. And if you show up in a polling place, there's no way to tell whether that ballot has been received or not because our polling place poll books were paper. And so there wasn't a way to check and see. So then they would be issued on election day provisional ballot. Once you verified that they hadn't in fact voted, then that provisional ballot would be counted. So I know that had an impact. Denver was polling place, Jeffco was polling place, Boulder. Those with vote centers had more options, so I'm not sure how that holds up in that model. And Sheila, maybe you can speak to that because I know you guys were a vote center and what, you know, compare your previous provisionals and their acceptance rate and what were some of the reasons.
The last general, so general 2010, we had about 750 provisionals, and this time we had 68 provisionals. So we saw a similar type of reduction, like you mentioned, not as much of a reduction as a county who would have been previously a polling place. But I think most of it is the addresses being able to be updated and verified on the spot in the actual location. We had that before, but it as Elena alluded to, it was a little clunky. We had to go between different screens, and sometimes election judges had trouble with that, so the fallback was issue a provisional. And the other thing would be late registrations. Mm. So when people showed up before in our county and weren't registered, they would say that they attempted to register before the deadline if that was correct, and they could sign an affidavit to that effect. And then we would register them and count their vote after the election. So it's, I think, emergency registrations versus same-day registrations in some of the cases as well. Did that answer the question, or did I confuse everyone?
That's helpful. Thank you.
Probably both.
Yeah. And if I can ask another question, mm-hmm. this is probably information you did not gather, and maybe you've got some anecdotal thought of who were those people registering on same day? I would expect a number of them would be, oh, I'm not registered, I thought I was. I mean, do you have any sense of how many people came in to register on election day because that was something new, or how many thought they were already registered and couldn't figure out what was going on?
Yeah, I think at this point we just have the number of those who were new. I know in our county we're going to go do some demographics on those to figure out if that's anything related. And in Boulder County, I suspect most of them will be of the student age.
Right.
And mostly more just making that connection and knowing, oh, I can vote and register. But again, we still had a very small number in our county, around 600 total new registrants in the county. So, and again, all that's in your charts and data that were provided for you. So
I have another question, and I apologize if it's in the charts and I didn't get to it. Do you have any sense around replacement ballots if there were an increased number because more mail ballots went out or anything like that, or did it hold steady? Just my sense anecdotally, just from the nonpartisan voter protection work we did, is there were a set of voters who didn't get ballots, and in talking to them it was clear that they hadn't changed their address and needed to update them. But then there was another set where we couldn't quite figure out why that was the case. Was there anything in the numbers that indicates it was any different moving to mail ballot delivery for everyone versus, you know, 10 where it was just people on the permanent or not permanent mail ballot list?
Yeah, I don't think I know we haven't done that level of analysis and haven't. That's one of those pieces where looking at how do you get that data back out to look at replacements and what's available, and we just haven't gotten to that level with what's available in SCORE and what the reports are. And we are curious on that as well as what, again, for future improvements of looking at who moved and got a replacement, which makes sense, who didn't move and got a replacement. But I'll see if we figure something out, definitely bring it for next month.
Any other questions?
You know, Amber was on her way, but...
And I'm not sure the appropriate time for this question or if we're waiting for something else, but there's a number of different counties reported, of course, that on election day that SCORE went down or having issues. The counties reported, which I thought was somewhat striking because I was just getting groups reporting information that I knew where groups were working in specific counties, but some of the counties, in terms of the time they were reporting it down, varied from county to county. So in terms of what they, at least the notes they were writing, it sound like. So I was trying to get more of an understanding. Was it, you know, out for a certain time, or was it spot, you know, what was the discrepancies in the different counties?
Yeah.
And why, I guess.
And that's our next layer. I mean, we had the business practice group, and most of the people on business practice group, it was intermittent, and therefore we could wait and get back on. I know at least one of the smaller counties that's on the business practice group, they just went over to the regular SCORE module and issued mail ballots during those time periods, which was an option for them. I think overall, if you just kind of more of an anecdotal, and again, we're going to continue to see what we can get from counties, is if you look at the number of provisional ballots, it still is very low, even with the intermittent usage. And it definitely, you know, most of the counties reported that if they did end up with a line, it was because of it lasted for a short while because of intermittent issues, but then they recovered from that.
I can share my experience, too, here in Mesa County.
That'd be great, Sheila.
It was kind of rolling. It was within one location, an election judge would get bumped off, but another would be able to get on. So there were times when there was at least one judge in a location that was on and performing okay while the other two were having trouble, and then another one would get in, and then another one would get bumped off. So it seemed to be like a load balancing thing as far as we could tell from our end, but Trevor did provide us a lot of information that made a lot of sense in our last meeting.
That's great. And yeah, I would say it's still that what we're looking into, and what does that mean? I do know one of the things that for us, we are definitely, and in talking to some of the other counties that have the university age, is we need to have a strategy for the younger voters and how they are going to participate in this election, even with the new model. We definitely were overwhelmed at our university site, for sure, and we'll be looking at how to address that and how to work better with the university to ensure we have the proper size of facility to accommodate what we need. I think the challenge with it is how do you scale and have people know what they're doing when you need them, when you don't have a lot to practice before then. And so those are some of the strategies we're looking at in 15 and for 16 to get ready for that. So, and Amber from Denver just walked in as well. And perfect timing, if you want to, yeah.
Real quick, I think Representative Tyler had a question.
Yeah, to follow up on that question, I noticed there was a lot of intermittent faults throughout the day. I knew there were a couple spots where were pretty serious. Okay, we're dead right now, and then back up. But I'm wondering how deep you can dig in terms of getting data. If you have, as Sheila was saying, one off, one on, one off, one on, or a couple off, that's very different from you can't get the whole VSPC online, so that might help with the troubleshooting. The more data that we can get on terms of what was happening, the better we're going to have an answer.
Yeah, I'm not. What I don't know is how reliable it will be, because sometimes there's the group think that happens, and if one person thinks to keep trying, that's the only part with that I don't know.
Yeah.
I know we can get anecdotal information for sure. It's benefit I'm not 100% sure of, and happy to ask more questions if we think that would be helpful. Yeah. On that.
And we are doing a after action report, yeah. And we just I think we're just now bringing on the vendor, and that's supposed to be completed in January, and all the affected clerks will be interviewed for it, as well as OIT is cooperating in the report, and you know, of course, members of our office. And my thought actually about the February report that's due from the commission was that we take the business practices report and then the after action, kind of put those together, because this is a technology report that's supposed to be submitted to the legislature on behalf of the commission, and then use that work kind of as the basis for what we report back.
Good.
And Randy, you know, we wanted, I mean, repeatedly commented at our business practice group meeting was the chain of communication and the support from the help desk was phenomenal, not just on election day, but throughout the election. And since we're problem-oriented and trying to fix things, we sometimes forget also what really worked well. People did really participate. We had extremely high turnout. The new web app was incredibly easy to train to and made training so much more efficient. And then, again, I just want to the technology, the SCORE help desk, both when things were working and when things were not as well on election day, giving counties really time to communicate with their teams and recognizing that was extremely helpful. So definitely kudos to the team and really appreciative of that. Even though we were in a bit of contingency. And I think that's the other piece that it points to, is really making sure that it gave a test run of contingency planning and encouraging counties to look at if it had lasted longer, were you ready, and what does that mean, so that we're definitely on board for 16. So, and then with that, if it's all right with the commission, I also invited Amber here to speak a little bit about her county's experience, and if you have specific questions. Does that work? Great.
Sure.
Thanks, Amber.
Good afternoon. Sorry I was late. We have a municipal election in about 5 months, so a lot of meetings going on. A couple things. It's just sort of a summary of the report I gave last week to the business practices group. In Denver specifically, we had the highest number of votes cast ever in a midterm election, 40,000 over 2010. So significant increase in participation that we saw. Couple statistics for us. We actually, I think had the highest number of in-person votes cast on election day across the state, and actually that was 73% of our in-person voting happened on election day itself. So over 11,000 voters for us voted at one of the VSPCs on election day. So the big story there is that we, based on our projections, we shouldn't have had more than about a 5-minute wait, but given some of the system issues that we had, we did have longer wait times, which are not acceptable to us. So we're certainly going to do whatever we can. But the caveat there is really more computers or more people wouldn't have really done anything, because it was really the issues with the system that were problematic. So overall, I think the numbers in terms of our planning and our allocation of sites and resources were actually right on where they should be based on the number that we had, and we actually had probably more than we needed for the most part. So the other stat for us, 72% of our mail ballots returned came in a 24-hour box or came through one of the in-person methods to drop off. So only 28% came through the post office. And that a lot of that is we had 23 24-hour boxes across the city. We're adding more even this year because that continues to be the method of choice for the voters generally. And that was a success story. And I think I know that I've heard amongst a lot of the counties they'd like to implement more of those. It's just there are some constraints with implementing them in terms of cost and the video monitoring and things like that. So definitely for us another success story. Just some data in terms of the voter registration piece of things. We had over 16,000 address changes within 30 days of the election. So people after that 30-day residency requirement were still able to continue to change their address, and we had over 16,000 processed during that 30-day period. And then we had about 7,600 new registrations within 30 days of the election. And I think we were just about 800, maybe a little bit under 800 on election day itself for new registrations. So again, you know, being able to continue to process, and we easily kept up with that processing, OLVR and all the other registrations that came in. And finally, on the voter registration and as it relates to the policy innovation of 1303, provisional ballots was a big story for us. We only had 178 provisionals for the entire election, and that compares to about 6,400 in 2010. So based on previous elections, gubernatorial as well as presidential, and just based on the numbers that we normally see for provisionals, we should have had about 7,400. So overall for us, we saw a 98% reduction in provisional ballots, which is actually better than what we expected in terms of the new model. So that is a tremendous success story, and for us, that amounts to about a $40,000 or $50,000 cost savings in this one election. So that is a significant success for us. And when you break that down, just because I think it's interesting to break this down, going back to 2010, based on the number of provisionals we had, 1 in 30 voters cast a provisional. And this year, that was 1 in 1,329. So a big success story for the policy change. In addition to that, and this is something that I gave you all a presentation on, we also track very closely the metrics and the data as it relates to customer service calls and those coming into our office. So we also, even though we had very high turnout compared to what we had previously, we actually saw a decline again in the number of voters having to call our office for information about voting. In particular, that was in the area of voter registration and mail ballot type issues. So in 2010, we had about 8,200 calls into our office, so 1 in 24 voters called us about the election, and in 2014, about 6,100 or 1 in 38. So again, saw a significant improvement in customer service calls into our office. And then our overall, we also track what we call first call resolution. So that means that when you call, the first person handling the call, if they're able to resolve that for you, then you get a first call resolution rate. And in 2010, we were only at a 52% first call resolution, meaning that call had to be transferred to somebody else to deal with. And we worked very closely to train the 311 call center on election-related matters, but also the policy itself simplified the solution codes that are associated with the calls themselves. So our rate for this election was overall 92%. So we saw a 40%, or we saw a 40-point betterment, if you will, of that particular statistic, not just for training purposes, but also the policy itself, I think, helps in terms of of simplifying the reasons that we had to respond to voters. And then in addition to that, our ballot trace system that we've been using for about 5 years now, we saw another big increase in the number of users and the number of subscribers. So we have subscribers that sort of use the system all the time, and then people can actually just access the system without being a subscriber. And we saw a significant increase, almost five times as much in terms of subscribers than the last gubernatorial, and then similar in the number of users that use the system. So overall, that really helps all of our metrics associated with, you know, what we track in the election. VSPC operation and setup was, you know, great for us. We were able to find very good locations. Setup was very good. Again, some of the tech issues on election day, we didn't experience any of that for the 2 weeks or the Monday prior, and so we did have wait times that, you know, frankly are a big deal to us, and we don't want to see that happen in the future. So we'll definitely work with the state to make sure that doesn't happen again. And then a couple other things, list maintenance. We saw less undeliverables than we've ever had previously, and we definitely attribute that to the list maintenance, the proactive list maintenance that is in 1303. I think that significantly helped that piece. So overall, voter experience, integrity, accessibility, efficiency of the election was very, very good for us, and we were overall very, very pleased with the policy and the technical innovations that we rolled out. And with that, I'm happy to take questions if there's any.
Can you speak to anything, how successful your app was since you rolled out the Denver Votes app and
Yeah.
Just curious about any stats or anything that you have about that, how it was used.
Yeah, we saw, and I don't have the final number, a couple thousand people downloaded it. We rolled that out just before the election, not too far before, about a month and a half before. We definitely saw a spike during some of our marketing efforts, and I didn't mention that, but we did a significant marketing an outreach campaign, online kind of contextual behavioral marketing, and we saw a lot more users going to our website as well as using the app. And I know the app, we got a lot of good feedback from the campaigns and some of the people that were working in the environment, because everything that they needed to know was right in the app. We also, as part of that app, kind of as a separate implementation, we rolled out a new election night results application that's mobile optimized and responsive, and that received rave reviews. That was available. We didn't have any technical issues with that on election day. So the app and the ENR and kind of all of that worked as it should throughout the election, and we got really good feedback, and so I think that's going to be a good thing for us going forward.
Anything else?
Since you guys do a great job of monitoring the phone calls that come in and coming, I'm just curious, is there the number of calls that came in, this is the first time with a big general election, was it people that were confused about the changes in the election law, or was it more just basic questions? I mean, was there any spike of being confusion of where do I go, what do I do, or you felt like there?
No, I think, I mean, some of it is, well, I didn't get my ballot, and so what do I need to do? And we'd look them up and find out, well, they need to change their address. And so it was really just kind of advising them, you know, you can go to any of the sites. And it also was sort of traditional things like, you know, maybe they missed or thought they missed the cutoff. So now instead of, you know, before, if they didn't get the registration deadline, it was, well, you know, you got to go back to your old jurisdiction, or, you know, you may qualify for emergency voting, but we're not really sure unless you come in, or you'll vote a provisional. So there's very complicated kind of solution, if you will, for that call. Now it's much easier to kind of say, well, you can come in or you can go online if it's within a certain amount of time. So we saw the simplification of the responses was significant. So we were able to increase that first call resolution very easily. And then we've seen a significant reduction in the calls about, like, when am I going to get my mail ballot, or did you get it, because of our ballot tray system. We're putting it all out there, and so that they don't need to call us and ask us about it anymore.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. We did have the one point on that, and I think this was on election day as well. A significant number of people were saying that they had updated at DMV or had gone online, and, you know, obviously because I think there's still some work to be done on streamlining the process of registration from CDOR to the counties, as well as the, you know, online voter registration is not real time. So people, if they had done it like right before they came in and had said, oh, you know, I already registered, well, you know, it just probably wasn't quite in there yet. So we did have that. And then we also, given our where we are in the metro area and the fact that a lot of people work in Denver that live elsewhere, we had quite a few people on Election Day come to sites that didn't live in Denver. And so we spent a lot of time kind of looking up where they should be and sending them to the appropriate place. And we used My Colorado Vote, the clerk's website, to kind of direct people to the options they had in other counties. So we actually spent a lot of time doing that. And some of our call center, the 6,100 that we got, were actually out-of-county type voters that we just directed to the appropriate place as well. And we get a lot of ballots in our drop-off sites here, so we kind of distribute those to the other counties as needed. So, and then that one other thing that I failed to mention are, that isn't related to 1303 so much, but we added some new equipment in our signature verification room that added a lot of efficiency and increased the volume that we could sort of put through the process on Election Day, namely signature verification sorting equipment, but also in addition to that, that functionality, we added a laser. And so on our envelopes, there's a secrecy tab that covers the voter's signature when it's coming back through to us. And the laser technology that we added on our signature sorter device actually cuts out that strip and removes that strip so that we no longer have to have people hand stripping all those strips off. So that was a significant efficiency. And then in our ballot prep room, we have envelope extraction desks. So when the envelope is getting, when you're removing the ballot from the envelope, the equipment basically has suction cups and opens it up, and it's much faster and more efficient. So we were able to reduce quite a bit of staff internally compared to previous generals and gain a lot of savings because of some of those innovations as well. So, any other questions?
So I don't know if this is a question for you or the whole business practice group. I know a couple months ago we heard about the working group that was working with the Postal Service and trying to identify possible issues and things like that. I'm wondering if there's any conclusions, you know, were there any issues that weren't expected or anything that came up, or how did things go in terms of the relationship with the Postal Service?
I think there's a couple of things. That group had put out a manual that I think a lot of counties utilized to make sure that they were complying with the postal standards, because the post office does have a lot of standards as it relates to envelope design and how all of that works. And a lot of counties utilized that, and I think it ended up being a very helpful tool. We also addressed that group in particular, worked with the post office to address some of the delivery issues that I think were brought up after the primary. And then we also, that group coordinated so that on election night, our office actually sent election judges out to the post office along with a member of the Secretary of State's team to pick up ballots for the whole state. So the post office actually gave all the ballots they had as of 7 o'clock to our office, and then we were able to distribute everything that was received, and those were then accepted by the counties. And I believe it was about 600 or so that were picked up on election night. And then that's in addition to anything that we would have gotten in our boxes. We then distributed that. And were able to receive that. So I think overall, the post office, a lot of things got smoothed out between the primary and the general. But that working group is meeting again early January to kind of analyze how things went and see what could be improved. Because one of the things that we've talked about this year for us, we actually modified our design of our envelopes so that when we're spraying the envelopes at the printer, the voter's name and the barcode associated actually gets sprayed right above where they sign. And we found that that significantly reduced the number of household exceptions and signature discrepancies. So before, the name was on the other side, and we had a lot of husbands and wives signing each other's. Well, when you actually print the name right above the signature, it works much better. So I'm hoping that, you know, some of the other counties maybe emulate that, because it did help that particular metric, just in terms of envelope design. Any other?
In
and maybe of opposite of the question of returning, but maybe was there anything for the business practice group of the first time mailing out all these ballots, anything learned since a large quantity for the first time going through? Is there anything, lessons learned from that process?
Majority of the counties in the coordinated elections have been doing mail ballots, and so the number of active voters hasn't changed. It's more how many come back in this election versus the coordinated in 2013 versus or even a primary. So going out from the majority of counties, it was the same process that they've been using for some time.
Yeah, I think the number, the quantity for the post office, I don't think was much different than what they saw in 2013 or what they even, I mean, really what they even saw in the presidential. It really didn't add too much to their volume, given the number of pieces that they normally deal with in a day as it is. So.
Yeah, just following up on what Amber said, we saw that for me, the part of looking at is how many ballots are coming back through the mail versus how many people are dropping them off, and how do we make, you know, help facilitate that process, because it naturally, as you get closer to election, more and more people like it, and significant numbers are dropping them off in person versus mailing them. So that's kind of the opposite end of the mailing, if you will, and looking at that. And that we saw throughout, that was the trend throughout the state. And one of the analyses we haven't done yet but are looking at is those who have 24-hour boxes. Is there anything significant with those who have 24-hour boxes? Not just that you have them for 24 hours, but does that, you know, is there that ability, how does that impact people's use of drop-off? If that makes
sense. Yeah, sure. Go ahead, Martha.
Thank you. I want to just follow up on that. Is there any way to track what volume is coming in after hours so that you could know whether the 24-hour aspect of the box, which goes to the to sort of addressing that cost concern, is there – how do we know that?
Well, I think some – it depends on how you pick them up and what you track at the county level. There's no systematic – way to gather that information. When you say that to me, I think of, you know, looking at what some of our first boxes back in the morning from the 24-hour box maybe. We empty them twice a day leading up to, and then more as we get closer to the election. I don't know, Amber, from you all having more experience, this was our first election and we only had three, so.
Yeah. So we do track everything by the time it comes in, and then we always empty out all the boxes at about 6 o'clock every night, and then we pick up every morning. So from that point to that point, we would have whatever came in overnight. I would say that just from what we've seen, you know, after 6 o'clock up until about 10, you still see a lot of traffic, and then they kind of, obviously, not everybody's up in the middle of the night dropping off their mail ballot, so it kind of falls off, and then a lot starts at like 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. as people are kind of going to work or going to work out. A lot of the rec centers, we saw a lot early in the morning kind of thing, so I think it just probably depends, but we do have that data by day, by time, and all of that as well.
It's just what time. Oops. We have similar emptying processes, but it's just what time do you start back up? So I'll check with the group and see if there's anything, even just from a few counties, of what they experience, some of the larger counties.
Okay. Any other questions? No? Okay. Thanks, Amber.
Thank
you. Thanks. I think business practices was the only group to meet since the last meeting. I don't think, Trevor, your group didn't meet, did they? At their meeting. Okay, mm-hmm. So it was a kind of joint meeting.
Yeah.
Is there any other post-election discussion anybody wanted to?
Well, I'm just wondering if maybe we could hear from Trevor a little bit more. We kind of touched on some of the technology issues, but I think there's probably, it'd be helpful to get kind of a bigger picture of that beyond kind of as it related to business practices.
Good afternoon. I'm Trevor Timmons. I'm the CIO for the Secretary of State's office. Thank you for the opportunity. So generally, activity was seen at voter service and polling centers throughout the day on Election Day and, of course, prior to Election Day. Overall, and some of this is repetition of what you've already heard, about 100,000 people voted in person at a voter service and polling center throughout the election cycle this fall. 75,000 of those voted on Election Day. You heard Amber McReynolds mention that 73% of their voters at BSPCs walked in on Election Day, so that's very close to the statewide average that we saw. And then we also saw fewer than 1,000 provisional ballots cast. Obviously, a provisional ballot is the default response. If you can't verify someone's eligibility, identity, right there on Election Day, which is the main purpose of having an electronic poll book at every voter service and polling center. So fewer than 1,000 were cast throughout the election, the November election this year. The system, even though it did handle those 75,000 individuals that walked in, obviously the functioning was not as smooth as we needed. The functioning of the application itself in terms of the ease of use was very good, but you've heard, that it was kind of up and down, throughout the day. We are, as Deputy Secretary Steyert mentioned, we are hiring an outside group to draft a report and provide recommendations. We expect that report to be available by the end of January so that that can be used as part of the submission of the commission to the General Assembly. I'll tell you three things that we do know about the experience on Election Day. We do know that there was a state network issue around 6:50 in the morning. That was resolved after about 24 minutes or so. We do know that there were issues with user authentication of county election judges across the two sites that actually comprise the statewide voter registration system. And the third thing, we do know that there was an issue with the number of concurrent database connections that was available. You may have read in the papers, we did take the state system down at 2 p.m. For about 5.5 minutes, about 6 minutes, so we could increase those number of available connections for use by counties. We know those three things. We have our own thoughts and opinions on what the impact was of each of those three things on the functioning of VSPC on Election Day, but we would really like that outside perspective. We lived it along with all the county election judges on Election Day. We really do need an outsider, we feel, to come in to look at logs, to interview counties, to interview election judges, to interview our tech staff, and actually pull together the information so then we can know, not have opinion about, but have outside informed opinion about what we should have known, could have done prior to and on Election Day, and then what we need to do, should do, prior to the next major election. And so, again, we expect to see that report before the end of January so we can provide that to the commission.
Go ahead, Martha.
Thanks, Trevor. I think Deputy Secretary Steyert indicated there was an RFP on that. Is that still out, or has a vendor been selected?
So, thank you. Again, Trevor Timmons. We did post a bid document. We sent it out to 8 companies that do work in this area. We actually did not get a qualifying response from any of those companies. Half of them said, we do this sort of work. We're actually booked at this time. We don't have free resources available to do this sort of work. We actually reached out to an expert who's done some work in other areas, post-election audit procedures preparation, and that individual is pulling a team together that will provide a response to us. We will receive a kind of a proposal from them, and then we'll go ahead and act upon that.
And is that the identity of that group? Is that something that can be shared at this point?
I don't know where we are in the bid process, so okay. I think until we're done negotiating that contract, we probably shouldn't
commit them before right. we actually have them
Fair
under
enough.
Contract.
They may run away too. All right. Anything else?
No. Thank you.
All right.
Thanks.
Thanks, Trevor. Any other items for post-election discussion? No. All right. The next other item on the agenda is setting a date and time for the next meeting. I don't know what people's thoughts are on a January meeting. We may have, when's the next business practices?
The meetings for Business Practice Group were set thinking we had until the middle of January to perform the final report, so very happy to hear it's not until February. With that said, our next one is scheduled for January 7th, and would appreciate more time if we do to gather and talk about some of the data and get something in a more formal format. One of the pieces is getting counties to engage, and it would be more helpful if we had more time, so later in the month, that would be good.
So everybody received the questions in the report. I guess if anybody has additional, if you didn't get a chance to look at it this morning, maybe if you have additional things you want, if you could get your comments into Steve in, you know, a week, he'll get them posted, and then you know, we can decide to add those to the survey. And then...
So I'm going to, can I just pause on that one
for a
second? Because I thought we had finalized the survey. I think it was, which, I guess if there's other questions we want asked, is that what you're saying?
Well, I don't know if anything came up after this election. Like Martha had the question about could you gather on the timing of the boxes or that kind of thing. I know that we finalized that, but maybe there was a couple of things that came up that somebody might want to try to gather some data on.
That'd be
great. If you have questions like that, you know, maybe we can tack them on, I don't know. And then hopefully get those responses back from the clerks maybe mid-January and meet after that. I think we should probably plan a couple of meetings. We may want to wait for the after-action report. I don't know if we'll have a whole lot else to add from a technology perspective until that's in, but we have till February 16th. So what's the committee's preference? You want to meet end of January, early February? I think we need to have probably two more meetings to get an update and then adopt the report. But
yeah. So something the week of the 19th, maybe? Does that give enough time?
Clerk's conference is that week. If we could do something maybe the early the next week would be preferred, and that way also I can use that to gather more data for those who might need some assistance. Yeah, if we could we do something the 27th or 28th, that would be, and that gives me some, that would give us time if we're going to meet that following week to get again another draft ready if we need to from business practice group standpoint.
If you want to stick with Fridays, it'll have to be the 30th. I don't know what day works for everybody.
Yeah, I just know I'll be gone the 30th.
Oh, you will?
For sure.
Okay.
Yeah, that's why. Yeah, we could.
Probably have you. So
I'm wide open Tuesday and Wednesday, but the rest I don't think I can move.
I can make that work as well.
Yep. I know it's off of Friday, but.
It's a lunch meeting. It makes it easier for reps to be there.
Yeah. Do we have
time for that? The 28th?
28th.
Especially if the Secretary of State's office provides food.
Especially when we get lunch.
Thank you for lunch.
That was a holiday thing. Don't count notes.
We'll take it still.
You guys have sporadically provided. It's awesome.
On Tuesday? That's the Tuesday. What about Wednesday? Is it booked then too? Aspen?
Yeah, this is Wednesday.
Oh, okay.
This is Tuesday.
Oh, so there's a couple hours on Tuesday. Oh, so Tuesday we could do the noon in here, the room's available. Tuesday the 27th at noon, does that work for people?
That'd be great.
Okay. And let's set it. I don't know if we'll have our report back yet, but maybe we can just give you an update at that time about things we've learned.
We'll have to make that 90 minutes.
Okay, 90 minutes.
Great. And we'll definitely have a draft from Business Practice Group, a little more analysis. As you guys are looking at the data and the survey, if you see things specific, it'd be great to have that ahead of time. I'll send out an email with some prompters both in the new year and closer to the meeting.
Okay.
As that's a long ways away with a lot happening in between. So.
All right. Well, that's all we have on the agenda. So unless anyone has anything else, that concludes the meeting, and we're adjourned.
Thank you.